Okay. Now, one interesting story about, I mean, often European NGOs don't really see the UPR, you know, as a very strong mechanism, because you rather use the Council of Europe, the European Court for Human Rights. You have a lot of, you know, entry points for your domestic human rights advocacy, and often the UN looks a bit remote, and, you know, in particular a review where many of the countries reviewing, you know, don't seem very appealing and very, you know, impactful counterparts, I would say. It's sometimes difficult to do the UPR. But a good example was the engagement of the Irish NGO coalition, which has been, you know, preparing TV spots, which has been, you know, working with domestic media quite a lot to make sure that the UPR is not only something which mobilizes NGOs, but which is seen by the, you know, common audience. And on some of the debates which happened in Geneva, which are quite contentious in Ireland, it had an impact in the public debate. And maybe you should explore as well what could be relevant for your domestic context, what could make a difference. Should a TV spot make sense? Should, you know, having a few stories to TV media make sense? Or should you limit yourself to printed media or to social media? So there are a number of occasions where you can just look at what would be the opportunities and what would make you closer to the people that you're trying to protect by using the UPR and the people you want to influence, which are basically government officials.
Okay, thank you. It's working. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Yeah, there is a deaf translator now because I was hitting. Sorry. When you say mobilizing the civil society, I mean, I don't see the tools. I mean, this is my concern since we've started, actually. We have the same discussion. As we have the Council of Europe and the Committee of Ministers, and as we have the sanctions on the execution phase within the Council of Europe, I mean, the United Nations, I mean, I never worked on the UPR, that's why I would not be a teacher on this. But, I mean, the United Nations normal initiatives, for us, is just not binding. So, you know, it's not, we will need some implementation, let's say, tools to maybe call the civil society into action to work with us and for us. So do you have some tools to, I don't know, maybe with the Irish video spot, as you see at the end, as can we show something to the spectacles, to the public,
saying that
it's okay, it's important, but at the end of the day, what will we get? No,
a question from, do you feel that international pressure, the pressure from other states on Turkey on its human rights issues, is strong enough or not?
It is strong. Of course, it is strong, but the international NGOs are agents for
other states.
The states, of course.
Do you have international, other governments, European or US or other governments, you know, openly criticizing Turkey for some of its human rights issues?
Of course.
Is that enough? Or do you think that the UPR can become a forum when this criticism comes together, when you can use it, you know, as a way to show to the public opinion and to the government that the pressure is not only coming from domestic NGOs or from international NGOs, but from a broad array of the international community? Could that be the moment to force your government to commit to some reforms, or just, you know, confront it with its ignorance to the recommendations made? Could that be the right moment to, you know, criticize your government's responses to these recommendations? Because often when we make recommendations to our governments, we don't have responses. When governments discuss bilaterally about human rights issues, we know what is said from one part, but, you know, we can imagine the response from the other part, but we don't necessarily have it publicly. And what the UPR could bring in a way is the answers to these recommendations. So is it something that you can use? And what would be the kind of recommendations which you feel would bring you the answers that you need to have?
Of course, I mean, when we look at this side, maybe for Western Europe, I would say for Turkey, I mean, for les pays en voie de développement, maybe it is something. But for France or for the rule makers of Europe, let's say Germany, France, and England, Great Britain. It's not going to be a hard pressure. I don't know.
You mean UPR, France, UK, and Germany?
Yes. I mean, what is the situation
the
there?
The story in the French UPR on which we worked was, during the presidential campaign in France, there was this idea of promoting what was called stop forms. So when people are stopped by the security forces in the street for an identity check, that they are given. I mean, there is this whole debate about control of faciès, stereotyping. How do you call that? Persons from migrant origins would be much more controlled than white people, and the whole discrimination going around that. So there was this idea from the then elected President Hollande to develop stop forms where anybody could receive a form when he's checked, and you know he could express a complaint to the government if he's checked 10 times a day, for example. And that proposition died, you know, for a few months after the electoral campaign took place. And there was a campaign by a group of NGOs based in France, including Human Rights Watch, including Open Society Institute, to revive that recommendation. And at the end of the day, that recommendation was again accepted by the government. So now we can, you know, we have something stronger to confront the government if it's not done in the next year or two. So, you know, the more specific you are and you're more related to the public debate, you try to focus your priorities and recommendations, the more you can get out of the UPR. While this proposition had died because the government is not accountable to anybody when it makes it and when the electoral campaign is done, NGOs were able to revive it in a way and were able to get this recommendation made half a dozen of times by, you know, African, Middle East or Asian governments, or even Latin American governments. And, you know, the pressure was a little bit there. And NGOs domestically will be using it to keep pressure on the Ministry of Interior, Justice and Foreign Affairs to give a meaning to that recommendation. So I think it's, you know, it doesn't go by itself. That's what I was saying at the beginning. It's not a mechanism which is self-implementing. You need to create opportunities. You need maybe to focus on a smaller number of issues about what is doable, about what your government can feel pressure on, and then to use these recommendations. I mean, the stop form issue was just brought half a dozen of times in the context of the French UPR, but that was enough. And so, you know, we often speak very generally about the UPR, but the reality is that it should really be a process where you guys look at your own priorities and look at how you can maximize these opportunities, how you should convince a few governments to make a recommendation which is very specific and very tailored to your own context, which you then could use to confront your government for not accepting it or for doing nothing while it has accepted it. So we often speak about the UPR as very general, but we as human rights activists, we need to bring it back to what we want to get achieved and see how we want to get it done.